Welcome to Create Your Own Light, where we harness our past, we embrace our future, and learn to conquer the roadblocks along the way together. I'm your host, Travis Howes. Let's get on with it. This episode is brought to you by YourWelder.com. YourWelder.com is an online directory of mobile welders. Whether at your home or at your industrial processing plant, we come to you. Our community of mobile welders can repair anything from the neighbor's mailbox that you just backed into or the cat bulldozer sitting on your job site. YourWelder.com is a directory of highly skilled professionals willing to help you on your job site on your timetable. YourWelder.com screens all of their welders using tools like photos from social media apps such as Instagram, Parler, and Facebook, even face-to-face meetups. YourWelder.com was built by actual industry welding experts who actually perform this type of work on a daily basis. And here's the best part. They're veteran-owned and operated. So go check them out at YourWelder.com. And also feel free to check them out on social media, where I'll include their links in the show notes. Look, y'all, today's going to be what it is. I'm actually recording back at my home in Charleston. Unfortunately, I live in a neighborhood here, and I'm not at my farm, so you're going to hear barking dogs in the back here in a second. But I have this handheld audible shocking device, and it really does light them up. So the neighbor's dog, they don't know why that dog, every time he comes around the fence, is so disciplined. It's because I stand over there, and I just lay it to him. So I feel like I do have a lot of to unpack in this episode. I've had off for the last week or two, and I haven't dropped an episode, and I told you it was going to be like that periodically. And this is why, man. Yesterday, I had an appointment. Jeez, I can't even get words out. I had an appointment with my therapist, and it was just one of those days where it felt like everything was piled up. I was in a horrible mood. I was fuck this, fuck that, everything is wrong kind of attitude. And I know that's not the right attitude to approach the day, but it all started with my morning. It started with my dog barking and waking me up, and it woke me up. And one of my things is, if I wake up without waking up on my own, it jacks my heart rate up. It gets me really fired up, and it puts me on edge very, very quickly. And it's hard to shake that off for the rest of the day. And I always tell people, don't let a few bad moments control the rest of your day. And it's easier said than done. It's actually hard to apply these things once it happens, because with me, I wake up with a body just laced with adrenaline when that happens. And it reminds me of the days when I was on the fire department, or even in the police department, when you would catch a hot call. How do you come down from that? It's damn near impossible. Well, what happened after that was my wife and kids went off to school. I got on the phone with my dad. We started complaining about things we complain about all the time. You go figure, government, economy, just bullshit that old dudes sit around and talk about. And before you know it, it's not even 9 o'clock, and I have already convinced myself that the world sucks, that it's all coming to an end, that the government, all this stuff, what I'm getting at is, we start getting into that negative mindset, and we don't even realize it's happening when it happens. It's just normal. And my friends, that is the company you keep. If you start your day off with bitching and complaining, the rest of your day is going to suck. I promise you, it's hard to get out of that mindset. It really is. Versus if I woke up, had a cup of coffee, went outside, and just tuned the world out and listened to the birds chirp. But no, that's not what I do. I immediately get on the phone with my father every morning. And after that phone call, I get on the phone with Randy. And my day is dictated how those conversations go. It's pathetic to say that, but it's absolutely true. You are the company you keep. So, and I'm not holding them responsible for any of that. I'm saying I get on the phone and I bitch probably more than any of them. Right? So that's what I'm getting at. Constantly on edge. Well, I just got back into town, and I'm so grateful for what I get to do with Post-Traumatic Purpose. I'm so thankful that people are open to hearing what I have to say, and they think enough of me to bring me out for these events. So, but what I'm going to tell you is this, I get very run down when I do this, very, and I don't think many people understand what goes into traveling for work. Now, there's a difference traveling for vacation and traveling for work. Anytime I hear somebody say, because I used to drive a lot, and I would hear people say, "Oh man, you don't fly to these places," immediately right there, I know I'm talking to someone who never travels for work or has never had that experience, because this is a typical tour date, just so you understand. So when I went to Texas, all right, 2 weeks ago, I had a 13-hour travel day. That's with layovers. That's me. I had to get up at 3 in the morning to catch my flight. Then I had multiple layovers. We had delays. By the time I got to Texas, I got my rental car. But the rental car, I'm going to be driving all over the state of Texas, mind you. I get there. It doesn't have a car charger. It was a cheap-ass rental car that didn't even have a car charger. So all I want to do is get some food in me. I want to stop and eat. But now I got to go back through this whole rental car process. I get back to the counter, couldn't cut the line, had to go back inside, wait in the line again. They assigned me a new car. I walk out to the garage to get it. That fucking car is not even there. Parking spot 37, I'll never forget it, because I wanted to throw my bags into parking lot 37 and shit right in the middle of parking lot 37. I was so mad. You ever been so mad you want to shit in a pool? That is how mad I was, all right? I have a migraine headache at this point. I walk back in and wait in the line again, get another car, and finally, I'm leaving San Antonio and I'm heading to New Braunfels, Texas. Well, I get stuck in traffic. I was like, you know what? I need to go ahead and get off the interstate and eat. But by that time, the traffic was so thick, I said, I'm going to wait till I get away from this traffic. Then I get outside of San Antonio, and there was nowhere. Like, I pulled up to the venue where I was performing. There's nowhere to eat except one taco place. I go over there and I eat 3 tacos. I go back to do my sound check. I'm there for probably an hour and a half doing sound check. Finally get to my room. It's 5:00 at night. I'm standing there getting ready to check in. And I know this sounds like a bitch session, but it's actually, I just want you to understand what a travel day like is for me. So I'm standing there. The lady's got my keys in her hand and she's about to put them in the machine to make my keys for my room. And another guest walks up. And while she's about to do that, she goes, "Can I help you, sir?" And she stops making my keys and goes to check this motherfucker in. So now I'm holding my face and she looks at me and goes, "I'll be back with you in just a moment." And I looked at her and I go, "No, ma'am, I need my keys right now. I need to go lay down." And she just looked at me with an attitude, gave me my keys, and that was my night. I didn't even eat dinner. I went to bed. I was crushed, okay? That day, or the next morning, I wake up and I go do my event. Great event in New Braunfels, Texas. Had an amazing time and wonderful people, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm on to the next one. We go to Bernie after that. And I was able, and I don't know if I talked about this on the last podcast or not, but I was out at Legacy Farms. I can't say enough things about them. Wonderful people. And they put me up and I had a great time. But then on the way home, guess what? Another 13, 14-hour travel day. Fast forward to Memphis last week. I know this is a bitch session, but listen. Y'all, this is what I love about what I do. I get off the plane. I go to get my rental car. They're sold out of fucking rental cars. There's 7 companies, 8 companies. None of them have a rental car because it was spring break. And I was like, "You got to be shitting me. I made a reservation." She goes, "Did you prepay?" And I said, "Ma'am, I've been traveling 15 years and I never prepay for a rental car." She goes, "Well, you should have because we're out." Okay. Fortunately for me, a very dear friend of mine lives in Memphis. He came and picked me up. We went and saw the sights. We went and had breakfast. And then we called my boy Ray. Y'all have heard me talk about Ray on the podcast before, Memphis firefighter, and my boy Hugh. Ray has the ponytail. Ray looks like Fabio, but like an older Fabio with shorter hair, okay? And Ray, the first time I met Ray was at a comedy event, and I saw him with his beautiful VO5 hair flowing in the wind. And I can't repeat what I said to Ray here, but it was along the lines of, like, I would pay to watch that man make love to somebody because he was just that gorgeous. Well, Ray has since retired and I want to wish him well on his retirement. And I got to sit down and have barbecue sandwiches with Hugh, my buddy Jamie, and Ray. And then it was off to Jackson, Tennessee we go, baby. And then so we're traveling. We get to Jackson. We knock out 2 great events in Jackson, Tennessee. Love the people of Jackson. Get back to the hotel, get some sleep, get on a plane, head home, and boom, here I am talking to y'all. Woo! So anyway, I am a little bit jacked up. So anyway, I have this appointment with my therapist. And I just start telling her, and I said, Laura, I said, I just can't find happiness in anything. I can't find joy in anything. And I sit here and I talk about and I teach about all these things. And I said, but it's happening to me too. And I said, I am telling these people and motivating these folks out here, and I find myself fighting the same exact fight. But I think that's a good thing, because at least I'm not pretending to have the answers, right? I'm not pretending to have a magical pill for anybody. Man, this stuff affects me just as much as it affects you all too. And it affects my family just as much as it affects your family, you know? And it's a constant grind. It's constant maintenance. So I was talking to her and she could feel the vigor in my voice. She could feel that I'm being stretched too thin. And I don't mean for my events. I mean, my personal life is getting involved to the point where I have multiple people. They need me here. They need me there. My children need me. My wife needs me. I'm not complaining. My family needs me. I have friends that need me, and I have events going on outside of my work. And I just can't accommodate it all, but I try to. And what we came up with was this. I give so much of myself to everybody else that I give very little of myself to me. And she says, you're operating at zero. And when she said that, it just made so much sense. See, sometimes you just need somebody to help make sense of these things. She says, you're operating at zero. Your cup is just empty. What do you do to refill your cup, Travis? I said, I don't know. I was actually had a FaceTime conference with her because I canceled the in-person one because I needed to get out of town. I needed to get to my farm. I went to my farm. And I told her, I said, I'm sitting out here. I'm not happy. I'm looking at these horses. I'm not happy. I got a tractor. I could go do things on. I'm not happy. And she said, you're at zero. And I want to ask y'all, how many of you are at zero? Because when you get there, I've been there before. I will tell you this. You don't stay there. But when you get there, you have to figure out how to replenish your cup, how to refill it, and how to get your engine started, right? Your engine, your car is in your driveway and it's just on zero because it's not even started. How do you even get it warmed up? How do you get excited to get warmed up to go out in town? Well, look at what you're doing in your life. How much are you giving to your job? How much are you giving to your family members? How much are you giving to your friends and everybody around you and trying to keep everybody happy and trying to keep everybody approving of you? And then take a step back and look at how little you're giving yourself. I think about that, man, because I have weddings I have to go to and coming up, and I can't make them. And I got so much pressure on me to go to this wedding. It's a family wedding, and I'm not complaining. Just listen. But in between this wedding, it's 4 hours away from where I live. It's an 8-hour round trip for me, and I literally have to make an 18-hour round trip drive. Why don't you fly? Because I'm driving, motherfucker. Stop asking. I literally have to make an 18-hour round-trip drive the following day. And I had to say no to this wedding. And I don't want to because I missed the last wedding because I was in Iowa working. And I miss a lot of things with family. And it puts a lot of pressure on me because I feel like the bad guy. I feel like I'm never around for things. But this is my job. This is what I do. And I don't know a lot of people that would take an entire week off of work to come to my wedding or come to my event, you know? So I can't do that. I have a family to take care of. And that's what I mean. Like, sometimes the pressure gets so great on us to do the right things. I was talking with my father and my dad, and I told him, I said, Dad, I'm not going to be able to go to this wedding. And my dad goes, you need to do the right thing. And by saying that, he meant you need to go to this wedding. And I stopped him and I go, Who is to tell me what is right and what's wrong in my life? The right thing for me is to take care of me. And I do teach that in post-traumatic purpose. And fuck, I got to live by that. I have to live by that. I can't go out and not practice what I preach. I just can't do that. So unfortunately, I'm going to miss a wedding to give myself a day of rest so I can be rested, so I can go do my event and crush my event in Maryland and not drag ass through that event. I was dragging ass in Tennessee when I was in Tennessee because when I travel, when I fly and I get back, sometimes it takes 3 or 4 days to get right. And I just wasn't right. And I hit the plane again and I was out there grinding. But I love what I do. That's the problem. I absolutely love meeting you all. I absolutely love telling our story in a way that nobody else can tell our story. Because this ain't my story. This is our story. This is what we experience. And there's nobody out there doing that. I know that. I've seen it. I've seen it time and time again. I see the fucking scam artist out there trying to start doing mental health stuff and getting in. People aren't taking them seriously because they're fucking, you can see right through it. That's why I take so much pride in what I do. I'm going to tell y'all what just happened a minute ago. Y'all think this hypervigilance thing, I teach hypervigilance and how real it is and how effective it can be. How it can negatively impact your life and your health. I go outside. I got an outdoor shower here. And of course, my outdoor shower, you can watch the whole street. And I'm watching the street as I'm showering away in the morning. I'm just trying to like get in a good mood. And of course, a car pulls in that I don't recognize, pulls up right behind my truck and puts it in park. Now it's a light colored Camry, Toyota Camry, which was a very stolen vehicle, by the way. It's one of the top stolen vehicles, super easy. Very, very dark tinted windows. I've never seen this vehicle before. I actually saw it the other day in the neighborhood. And that's when I saw it, I recognized that that's that same car. And so what do? I put my towel on, I walk out, I actually put some shorts on and I walk out. I walk right up to the driver's window and I tap on the glass with my knuckle. Now, when I did, the door flung open and the guy just looked at me and I said, "Can I help you, sir?" And you know what he said to me? He's parked in my cul-de-sac. Now there's only 5 cars that belong back here. He goes, "No, you can't help me." He said it with an attitude. And I said, "Excuse me?" He says, "No, you can't help me." So right then, what do we do in that situation? Now we're being challenged, and we're being challenged in front of our house when we know something's not right, when we feel something not right in our bones, because we are not Joe the Best Buy salesman. We are the people that understand there are criminal elements out there, bad things happen to people, et cetera, and we're always watching and plotting our moves to be in front of and have the advantage of on other people, right? When things are going to go bad, that's hypervigilance working against you. So I immediately wanted to get defensive with this guy and say some things, but I didn't. I said, "Sir, let me explain something to you." I said, "I don't recognize you." And he goes, "Why is that a problem?" And I was like, "Okay, here we go. This is one of these liberal fucking people that just want to challenge everything." And I said, "Dude," I said, "you're sitting in front of my house in a blacked out car. And I don't recognize you." I said, "You don't know me, but in my world, that's a problem." And I said, "I'm not here trying to make this situation worse." I stuck my hand out and I said, "My name is Travis. What is your name?" Then he introduced himself. And then I look down, and I see binoculars next to him, and then I see a tactical bag next to him. I don't know who this motherfucker is. Well, then he looks at me and goes, "Man, I'm a private investigator." And then I immediately thought, "Well, you suck because you blew your own cover. I didn't blow you. You blew you." Wait a minute. That didn't sound right. Listen, I didn't blow the private investigator's his cover, right? He blew himself. He blew his, I can't even say this right. You know what I'm saying. So he pulls out his badge and he goes, "I'm with the state of South Carolina." And right then I was like, "Dude, first of all, that's SLED, South Carolina Law Enforcement Division. Don't come at me like that. You don't know who I am. You don't know my law enforcement background." I didn't say that to him. I go, "You're not with SLED. You're a private investigator, correct?" And so now he's like, "Okay, this guy's clearly former law enforcement." So we start talking. He tells me he's watching a house down the street, whatever, et cetera, et cetera. But that's what I'm getting at. I made the situation worse by walking out there. I didn't go out there and try to antagonize the guy, but I wanted to know who's parked in front of my house. And I feel like I have the right to do that. Now, he's on a public street. He has the right to tell me to go fuck myself and close his door. And had he had done that, I would have walked off and then I would have called all my police buddies and be like, "Y'all come run this motherfucker off." But I didn't do that. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about putting ourselves in situations that we don't need to put ourselves in. I remember there was a time in my life where I was at a friend's house. And this is hypervigilance. Now, we're all military. We're three of us hanging out at one friend's house, all Marines. And this was in a new construction neighborhood. And there was, my friend lived at the end of the neighborhood. There, the road went past their house, but nobody lived back there. It was just undeveloped. The road just stopped. Well, one night we're sitting there, we saw a car drive by, and my one buddy's like, "Hey, why is there a car driving past the house?" We look out the window, it goes down there, it turns the lights off. So immediately we're like, "Oh, fuck no." This is when we're in our early 30s now. Things are a lot different. So my one friend goes, "We got to go down there and see what's going on." I immediately thought, that's probably not a good idea. Somebody's probably down there, either one, just getting high, or two, hooking up with somebody. But monkey see, monkey do, right? My friend runs out the door with a shotgun in his hands. We all run out of the door with weapons in our hands, all right? You see how this situation can turn very nasty very quickly because of our hypervigilance and our curiosity and our immaturity at that. We walk right up on this car, all three of us. The dude was scared shitless. He sees three armed men standing there next to his car. Guess what he was doing? He was in there with a girl. They were just trying to hook up. We put ourselves in a very bad situation, and I talked to my friend after that. I said, "Man, that was the stupidest thing we've done." I said, because had that guy have came out blazing, he would have been justified. Every one of us would have went to prison. And that's my point. That's my point. If it's not putting you in danger, don't fuck with it. Let it go. It's one thing to be observant and aware. It's another to be so hypervigilant that you put yourself in a bad situation. And I thought about that when I talked to this private investigator this morning. He could easily just open up his door and shot me. And I walked up on him. I walked up on his car. I wanted to know who he was and why he's sitting out there on a public street in front of my house. He has every right to do that. I don't own that street. So that's what I'm getting at. Just keep yourself out of situations. And if you feel that uncomfortable, leave. If you feel uncomfortable in a situation, leave. Do not feel like you have to confront everything that you question in your life. You know, we tell our kids that. Pick your battles. You can't fight everybody that's ignorant. And it's the same with us. We can't confront everybody out there that's ignorant. You gotta let things go. I started realizing that in traffic because people drive like assholes, right? And I felt like that for a long time, like people were always messing with me, but it's not me. Those people fuck with everybody they encounter. They're bullies. They roll up on everybody. They flash their lights. They beep their horn. They flip you off, and then they keep going. So why confront them? Why play their game? Why stoop to their level? Like, older people knew what they were talking about when they were trying to tell younger people, don't stoop to somebody else's level, because you'll be stooping your entire life. You will be stooping to people's level your entire life. So you have to rise above it and ignore it. It's not worth your freedom. It's not worth that. I heard a saying the other day that I liked. And I guess a lot of people have heard this, but I heard it, man. And this guy was like, "Man, if I gave you $1 million, would you take it?" And the person said, "Hell yeah, I'd take it." And he said, "What would you go do with it?" And they said, "It would change my life. I don't even know. I'd just start going and enjoying my life." And he said, "So if I gave you $1 million, you'd start enjoying your life?" He said, "Hell yeah." He said, "What if I gave you $10 million? Would you take it?" And that same person said, "Yeah, I would take that $10 million. And he said, "What would you do with it?" He said, "I'd go enjoy my life even more." He said, "So you'd go enjoy your life even more." That person said, "That's right." He said, "What if I gave you that $10 million and told you you wouldn't wake up tomorrow? Would you take it?" And that person said, "Hell no, I wouldn't take it if I wasn't going to wake up." And the man said, "Why not?" He said, "Because I couldn't go enjoy my life." And that was the point. He said, "Why aren't you waking up every day like you just got $10 million?" And the truth is, we don't wake up every day because like we just got $10 million, because we wake up and we talk to people and we bitch about things and we worry ourselves to death about fucking things that do not even matter. We worry about bills. We worry about debt. We worry about our marriage. We worry about our children. We worry about our health. We worry about this, and we worry about our jobs, and we worry about impressing people, and we worry about the opinions of other fucking people. And we oppress ourselves. We do it to ourselves. We check social media 3,000 times a day. And if you think that doesn't have an effect on your mental health, you're crazy. When you see every picture of everybody having fun and you're not having fun like that in your life and you're like, man, everybody's enjoying life, but it's a scam. They're not either. They're trying to make you feel that way. They're trying to make you feel like, hey, look how envious, you know, look how great my life is. Fuck, I do it. Y'all think my life is sunshine and rainbows? You think that social media, I've had so many people tell me, they're like, man, your life seems great. My life has just as many problems as yours. I promise you. I just don't post my problems. I don't openly talk about my problems. I keep that between me and the people that need to know about it. That's it. You need to wake up every day like you just were given $10 million. And value your life and wake up and go enjoy it. You know, I talk about this one thing when I'm teaching post-traumatic purpose, and I talk about there's a time in my life, and I still have these moments, where I'll be at a get-together or something, and I see people having fun, and I hate them. I hate watching other people have fun, and I sit there, and I'm like, how dare you enjoy your life? How dare you not have any worries to where the point where you can sit there and smile and laugh and have fun with people and be close to people in close proximity within arm's reach of you and people laughing in your face and people walking by you and behind you and you're not even worried that they're going to cut your throat from the back or throw you down and rob you or and assault you. How dare you live so free while I'm over there in the corner with my back to a wall watching in complete misery? And it makes me envious of those people. And I try not to be like that. I try to put myself in uncomfortable situations just to feel it and just to show myself nothing's going to happen. I try to tell people this with hypervigilance all the time. Sit with your back to a door when you go to a restaurant. Your wife will tell you if somebody's coming in with an AK-47. I promise you, she's not going to let it just go unannounced. I still do this. I still work very hard on this. And I feel like it's just like secondary trauma exposure. I teach this in my class. You can give secondary trauma exposure to people, and you can, just like hypervigilance, you can give that to people. You can make them think this place and this world is more scary than what it really is or has to be. I got mad at myself the other day because I was on the treadmill. I was in Jackson, Tennessee. I was at the Marriott, and I was like, all right, I'm gonna go down to the gym. Nobody's going to be in there because it's the middle of the day, and I'm going to work out. And I got on the treadmill, and it was 19 minutes and 27 seconds. I looked down, and the door opened. As soon as the door opened, a guy walks in, gets on the treadmill next to me, looks at me. I hit stop on the treadmill and said, motherfucker, and walked out just like that. And you think that guy doesn't know why I did that? He knew. And he was just coming in to get a workout. But I can't be next to people like that. I was in a confined space. I don't want you next to me. That's like when a man's pissing at a urinal and there's 47 urinals sitting there. Guys, you know what I'm talking about. And somebody rolls up at the urinal right next to you. I'm not your homeboy. I don't need to sit here and talk to you and feel your presence in this moment. Give me some fucking space. But people like us don't seem normal to people that are not like us. And people like us are completely normal to people like us. It's a very, very fine line that we walk. And we are abrasive with people. We are offensive with people. We do put, people are put off by our presence because of things like this. I remember I've been in conversations with people where they'll be within my arm's distance and I'll back up to give them more distance, and they'll close that distance. And I will stick my hand up and be like, can you give me some space? And then they look at you like you're an awful human being. And right there, their mind's made up that you are an absurd asshole. But it's not. I'm not. My training experience has led me to understand that that's a very dangerous place for you to be standing for me. I think people take advantage of my kindness a lot. And I think that's also why I put up a defensive front and a posture. It's to keep people from getting in and abusing my kindness, because at the end of the day, I'm a really nice person. I do believe that. And I'm a very giving person. But I've been taken advantage of so many times, or people tried to take advantage of that kindness so many times, that it's very hard for me to be warm to strangers. Case in point, I was at an event in Jackson, and I'm going to talk about this because it was absolutely fucking hilarious. When I was in Jackson, Tennessee last week, I took a break, and my first break during the class, and this lady approaches me, and she says, "Hey, I'm with so-and-so mental health, and I train on this and that." And I was like, "Okay, that's wonderful. Thank you for coming out." And then all of a sudden, she started trying to teach me while I'm on my break. Like, she started going into her belief system, and I'm sitting there thinking, all right, that's not what this is. This is not the forum for this. I'm actually trying to go piss right now, and you're holding me up, trying to convince me. And what she was trying to do is, like, not critique what I was doing, but kind of trying to show her expertise in a certain field. And I get it. You're excited. But then she looks at me and goes, "Would you mind at the end of your course if I stand up and say a few words on this? Just, I won't take much time." And right then I knew. I was like, you know what? I should not let this happen. Every bit of me said, no, don't let this woman get up at the end of your course and do this. But the good guy in me said, you know what? Yes. And I told her, I said, look, these people will have been here for 3 hours. They came down here voluntarily. It's late. This was an evening class. And I told her, I said, they want to get out of here too. And I said, 2 minutes. She goes, I won't be any more than 2 minutes. I said, okay. So at the end of my course, I completely forgot that I was going to let this lady get up. And I closed out and I told everybody, thank you for coming. And I was about to walk off. She jumps up, Travis. And I was like, oh shit. And I was like, okay. I was like, this lady would like to say something to you guys. And I told them, I'll be out in the hallway waiting for everybody to shake your hands. Well, 2 minutes goes by. And my connection that helped set this event up was looking at me from the off side of the stage, like, what the fuck's going on? And I'm looking at him. And she is going into a full-blown presentation. I mean, full fucking blown mental health presentation of her own. And I realized it right then. And I said, motherfucker. And I walked up to my guy and I go, you got to stop this right now. I go, this is about to get real bad. And I go, it's going to piss a lot of people off. He looks at the training captain and gives him the, hey, she needs to be done. And the training captain, because he saw what was going on, and he knew that this was bullshit, and so did everybody else sitting there. She went from trying to say a couple things into a straight sales pitch, trying to market herself to get clients. And that's not what she led me to believe. So now what I realize is, okay, you just used my platform to try to gain from my platform clients. And that's what I get for being nice, right? And that is what scares fucking people with mental health. It's people like that is what scares people like us with mental health. And it dilutes what we're doing, and it fucks up what we're doing, and it ruins the goddamn trust that we're instilling in one another about this mental health thing. It completely shuts people down. And the captain jumped up and goes, that's it fucking enough. Just like that. And oh my God, everybody was laughing because they saw right through that bullshit. And then they came outside and people were talking about it. And they actually, a couple days after that, they were still talking about it. And it sucks because I was told that they were going to use this woman. And now because of what she did, they're not going to use her. And that's my point. Be careful. Be careful who you warm up to, and be careful how trusting you are of people. Because I'm telling you, if I haven't learned anything, I've learned this. People have motives, man. And I'm not saying everybody out there, but when I come off abrasive, you need to understand it's because there's a lot of shit that goes on in my life behind the scenes that people don't understand. That, I mean, when I tell you a lot, that's one story of probably, I don't know, 300-400. I have a lot of different things happen where people just aren't genuine. And so it makes me hesitant. I remember I used to reply to every single message that would come through. And then I realized the second I start doing, people will engage you. And before you know it, they're trying to sell you something. And I was like, you got to be fucking kidding me. Case in point, I got a message a couple weeks ago from somebody that essentially they said they want to do what I do. And I was like, well, you know, if that's what you want to do, that's great. I commend you. Get out there and start speaking. But that wasn't enough. This person wanted to know how to do what I do. And they said, I've already spoken several times. I want to do a tour like you. How do I do that? And I'm trying to be respectful how I tell the story, because it was kind of off-putting. I was like, well, man, you don't just put together a tour. That doesn't just happen. You don't just, okay, I've spoken to five groups of people, and now I'm going to tour the country doing this. And that's part of it. You know, I'm humbled that somebody wants to speak, but at the same time, it's like, this shit doesn't just, you don't just throw this together. And what I said was like, man, I've been doing this for 15 years, and it takes a lot of time, and it takes a lot of networking, and it takes a lot of relationships. It takes thousands and thousands of appearances in front of people to be able to eventually build a tour to where people trust you to come in and trust what you're saying. You know, it's like, you can't just say, hey, I'm doing 15 dates across the country and expect people to show up when they don't understand who it is you are and what you're doing. And I admire people's passion, and I always try to help people. And that's part of my problem but part of my help is being real with people. And when I said that to this person, when I was like, hey, look, he said, how do you suggest I do it? And I said, just get out there and start speaking more. They didn't like my answer. And I could see that they were put off by my answer, but that's the truth. I'm not going to sit here and lie and blow smoke up somebody's ass. It was the truth. Like I said, look, man, you got to speak more. From every engagement, when you go and you have a positive engagement, that should potentially turn into three or four more engagements for you. And they didn't like that. So I took that as, well, you just want to jump on my fucking tour and just come with me? I've already put the years of work in. Is that what you want? Like, because I felt like that's what somebody was asking of me. And that's why sometimes when I communicate with people that, I don't know, I guess that they think I'm off-putting. I don't really talk about personal shit on here, but can you tell I'm fired up, man. I'm wound up tight because there's been a lot of that kind of stuff going on. I'll tell you a funny story. I was at Food Lion the other day, little shitty ass store, a grocery store that we have down south. It's a piece of shit store. It's when you go in and get steak, it's like half cooked because it's been sitting on a shelf rotten. Like you're like, yeah, that motherfucker's already medium, you know, medium rare. All I gotta do is put it on the grill for 2 seconds and it'll be medium. I don't like these self checkout lines, man. Boy, I'm telling you a lot about what I don't like today. I'm sorry. Look, I'm good, just so I don't need an influx of buddy checks. I'm good. I want to put this content out. Hey, sometimes I got to bitch too, right? Sometimes I need to vent too. I got a buggy or basket, whatever you call it, the little cart, because I get teased for calling it a buggy. But I got a buggy full of stuff, man, and I'm going out in I pull up to the line. I'm out at my farm. And a lady sees me in line, she cuts her light off. And I figured that I was the last one, so that's why she cut her light off and then looked at me and said, sir, I'm closed. And I wanted to be like, you weren't fucking closed when I pulled up here. But I didn't. I remained calm. And I said, well, where am I supposed to take this? Because I didn't see another cashier open. You know what she told me? She goes, you can go to self-checkout. And there were two people in front of me. Now, y'all, those of you that know me and you've listened to previous episodes, you know what I said next. I said, I looked at her and I said, ma'am, I can't do that. And She goes, well, I'm sorry. You're going to have to because I'm closed. And I said, there's not another cashier coming. She goes, she's in the bathroom. And I was sitting there like, this lady had been by herself for 20 minutes. And I'm like, well, damn, somebody needs to go check on that girl because she's got some bad stomach problems. If she's still in the bathroom, she might not be okay. And so I looked at her again in front of those ladies and I said, ma'am, I can't do self-checkout. And she goes, I don't know what to tell you, sir. And so right then I hit her. I said, ma'am, I can't read. And you could have saw all the blood leave this woman's face. She was so embarrassed. And the two ladies in front of me, they were so embarrassed for her. I honestly thought they were about to buy my groceries. But I didn't give a fuck. I was standing there. I was like, you know what, motherfucker? I didn't go to cashier school. I didn't fill out a damn application and come here and do on-the-job training to do grocery store work. That's not what I did. And that's what I feel like. I don't want to go and put my apples and my bananas on the thing and have to do the code because I don't know how to do that. And they sit there and they weigh it, and I got to sit there and look up the broccoli and shit. I can't do that. I'm not good at that stuff. I don't have patience for that. So I just told her I can't read, and I'm going to make her do her job. And then I get up to the counter. And you could tell she was so embarrassed. And when she gets done, she's like scanning stuff. Of course, I put my card in and I follow the instructions on the thing. And she can tell I can read because I'm sitting there checking out on the screen, punching all the buttons. I said, all right, have a blessed day. And that was it. Was that a dick move? I don't know. I do it all the time. I did it in the airport the other day too. I was actually flying. And I do not like having to do other people's jobs. I think people are just getting fucking lazy. Y'all probably gonna think I'm the biggest dick. I checked out the other day and the lady's looking at me. I know she thought I was bullshitting, but I actually let her check it out the whole way. And you can tell they feel sorry for you too, man. I feel sorry for you. I was watching a movie on a plane, Cry Macho with Clint Eastwood. I didn't like it, but I did like what he said. He told his little boy, he said, I used to be a lot of things. Being macho is just showing that you have grit. It impresses no one. When you're young, you think you have all the answers. And by the time you get old, you realize you don't. And then it's too late. See, I'm not waiting until I'm old to figure that out. I've already figured that part out. I realize I don't have all the answers. I realize I'm not trying to be macho. I realize I'm not trying to prove that I have grit to anybody in my life anymore. I'm trying to get rid of that. I don't need that. I'm having a hard enough time because I was conditioned for so long to be that guy. It's taking a lifetime to uncondition, you know, or to decondition, or however you want to word that. It's taking me a lifetime to soften up and to let people in and to be more gentle with people and to be less suspicious of people, because that's it's an exhausting life, man, and it's miserable. I'm operating at zero this week. Where are you? Where are you operating from? You got to find a way. I'm speaking for myself, but I know I'm speaking to a lot of people here too. Got to find a way to fill that cup, man. Got to be able to unplug. I was actually just doing a corporate account. I'm doing something with an insurance company later this year. And it was hard getting the event lined up because they were very corporate minded. See, in the fire and the police world, we're not corporate people. We do things and we do them fast and we do them effectively right now, because that's the life we're used to living. We communicate quickly, effectively, and boom, mission accomplishment. Where the corporate world, they communicate during business hours and that's fucking it. I tried calling this lady back. She called me at 3:45. I called her at 3:47 and her phone was off. She left me a voicemail. I called her back. Couldn't get her. Tried her four more times. Couldn't get her. Sent her an email. Hey, just tried to call you. Got an automatic response. I'll be in the office tomorrow. I was like, what the fuck? She sends me an email the next day. Hey, got your voicemail. I unplugged for the day after I talked to you. And I couldn't understand that. That blew my mind because I never unplugged. See what I just told you? I actually just confessed to something. openly, not even thinking about it. I never unplug. I'm always on. I will answer emails. I will answer phone calls. I will answer texts. The second they come through, I put everything on hold and I address the issue at hand right then. I actually got an email from somebody in Indiana the other day about an event. She knows that I'm like this. She said, I don't feel like you have to drop everything to answer this email, but we're looking for this. And I dropped everything I was doing and I did it. I was like, there's no way I can't. I'm conditioned for results. And what it did is it made me start making fun of this corporate woman. I was just like, man, how do they live their lives like that? They get to just unplug and just fucking come back to it tomorrow. Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what they do. It'll fucking be there tomorrow. It's not the emergency that you think it is. And that, my friends, is how you start filling your cup. You stop operating at zero. And all that important stuff you got going on in your life, just push pause and go take care of yourself. Go do something for you. As soon as I hit stop today on here, I'm taking myself to lunch and I'm going to stay out of the house until my girls get home. That's my mission today. We all know the house on your days off can suck you in. It can alienate you. Because it's comfortable. We build our own prisons, right? That's exactly what we do. Pablo Escobar built his own prison. And he had cocaine and hookers coming to him. He didn't even have to go get it. He stayed in prison for however many years and had cocaine and hookers in his family and hung out with his boys and had barbecues. Why did he need to leave? He don't need to leave. And that's kind of what we do in our home sometimes. I'm going to put this out there for a very special person that listens. I don't know if they're going to listen to this one or not. I know they haven't read my fucking book. Because they've told me. I feel like I'm a candidate for medicine. I've been told I'm a candidate for medicine. And yet, I keep refusing this medicine. I keep refusing it because I have thought, yeah, I can wait this shit out. I have thought for so long that I'll just keep grinding, man, and it'll go away. It'll eventually heal. I'm going to tell you right now, my hip, I've had horrible hip pain for 2 years now. I don't even know if I've ever even publicly acknowledged this. Horrible. I mean, agonizing hip pain to where a point I can barely walk some days. It's gotten so bad, it's moved from my back down into my hips, right? And I refuse to take medicine for it because I think, It'll just get better. Well, dude, it's not. It's getting fucking worse. And the more I contemplate not taking medicine, because I am a very stubborn man, I'm very hell-bent on my ways, the more that I'm starting to think that I'm wrong, and the more I'm thinking, like, sometimes you need help, man, and you need wherever you can get it. And I'm not being the perfect model of what I'm doing when I'm telling people, don't go get medicine. Try it on your own for a while. Well, you know what? Sometimes we need help. We need a spot. And I know I'm saying this, and 6 months from now, I still won't be on medicine because that's how, like, against it I've been my whole life. And I have my reasons, and I don't need anybody trying to convince me otherwise. But I do start to contemplate from time to time, just like I contemplate religion. You know, it's I've been against religion my whole life, but there's something that has shifted within me this year. Well, not this year, within the last year or so, that I've really started to start noticing. And that doesn't mean I'm flipping through the Bible at night and learning scripture, but I will tell you this. I'm going to publicly say this right now. I want to start speaking to churches. And I want to start speaking to churches because I know that there's a huge audience out there of people that also experience what we go through. And when I tell you I want to start speaking to churches, I'm still going to be me. I'm still not going to bite my tongue. And I think that would be a breath of fresh air. I realize that this is not exclusive to us. This message that I've been on for so long, it's not exclusive to responders because I meet so many people at my events who are not first responders. Their supporters are first responders, their spouses, their family members, their staff of the event venues, and they come up and they talk to me, and everybody has problems, man. Everybody has issues, and everybody has experienced trauma, and everybody has experienced mental health problems. And this is a fucking epidemic, man, and it's so scary. And I just started thinking, because the other day when I was in New Braunfels, we did it in a church. And this is, I don't know, third or fourth time I've done it in a church. But I told them right there, I said, look, what I'm about to tell you, I'm not going to censor. And I don't care who's watching. And I looked over at the cross in the corner of the room and kind of smirked a little bit. They knew JC was watching. But I didn't say any less motherfuckers because JC was watching. If I start speaking to churches, I'm not going to water it down for the church. Look, man, because if I can't be myself in the church, where can I be myself, right? And I'm serious about this. I'm so passionate about the message that I'm putting out, and the message that of authenticity, that it needs to be broadened. Now, I don't want to go up there and put on a three-piece suit and go get saved in front of everybody and be like, all right, listen, what? It's no, fuck no, man. I've lived a life of sin. I still do. I'm the most imperfect motherfucker I know. And I think that would resonate with a lot of people. What say you? How do y'all feel about that? If you go to church, would you rather somebody stand up in front of you who's got all the answers, or you stand up, rather have somebody stand up in front of you that's going to be so real it's actually going to ruffle some feathers, but it's going to move the congregation? You know what I mean? We got to start moving each other, man. We can't. I tell most of my classes when I start, I'm like, if you came here expecting kid gloves, you came to the wrong place. You know, I feel like there's only one way to really talk about mental health, and that's to take the gloves off of this bitch. That's the only way there is. Gloves off. All right, I got a little vent session out with y'all. Don't take that personally. Look, I'm a human being. I have problems too. My plate gets full too. I operate at 02. People come at me sometimes, and it's a lot. And as you know, I remember when I used to work with celebrities in comedy, and I would hear people say, oh, I met that guy and he's a dick. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, no, he's actually not. I've actually spent time with that person, and they're a very beautiful human being. You probably met him because you came up to him at an inopportune time and approached him or her the wrong way, sticking a fucking camera in their face, acting like your best buds. You don't know nothing about this person. You know, you violated their space somehow. I'm going to tell you, most of the people that I've met celebrity-wise are very, very, very good people. But you got to think, they get crowded, man. They I don't, people come at them just weird ways. Now, if you ever listen to that episode of me on Cleared Hot with Andy Stump, I do tell a story about the biggest douchebag I ever met, celebrity. I never say who it was, but maybe I'll tell that story another time. But I have a really good one. Until then, y'all have a good one. Thank y'all for hearing me out. I hope there was something in here that helped you. You know, my intentions are to never sit down and put my problems on Front Street, or never even be to complain. But you know, like I say, sometimes this is my forum. This is my voice. And, you know, I got a bitch every once in a while, too. I love y'all, and I truly mean that. Thank y'all for the support. See y'all soon.